There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name's Paul Riespendel, and I'm your host. On today's program, unlicensed radio stepping up to serve the residents of New Orleans, but visited and threatened by the Federal Communications Commission. We'll hear from a volunteer from Radio Algiers serving that neighborhood in hurricane-devastated New Orleans. And of course, we'll check up with what's going on in our media environment with some Media Geek headline news. Do stay tuned. Senate Commerce Committee Chairman Ted Stevens is still looking to crack down on the content on cable TV. He has been meeting with executives from that industry to discuss whether and how to regulate indecent content on cable. Currently, cable and satellite TV are exempt from indecency rules. Indecency is regulated only on broadcast media between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. Stevens might try to add cable regulation to a Senate bill that would be the companion to one passed in the House back in February. The House bill would increase the maximum fine for broadcast indecency from $32,500 to $500,000. That bill would also make performers liable for indecency fines rather than just broadcasters. The House indecency bill also has a three strikes clause, which requires an automatic license revocation hearing for any station that accrues three indecency fines. Senator Stevens' attempt to add cable and satellite indecency regs to the Senate version of the bill may prove to be a tough fight. Further, there are questions about whether such a provision would pass constitutional muster. The Supreme Court case that upheld the FCC's right to regulate indecent content on the airwaves, 1978's Pacifica versus FCC, was specifically tailored to broadcast media. While home-delivered satellite TV did not exist in the late 70s, cable TV and even uncensored pay TV like HBO did, and was not included in the court's decision. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin is also stepping up his rhetoric on indecency. He's also taking aim at cable, encouraging the industry to create a so-called family tier so that consumers can subscribe to a block of channels that will not contain potentially indecent content. Martin expressed his opinions at a panel held at the Federalist Society, where he clashed openly with representatives from Time Warner AOL and the Cato Institute. Cato's VP of Public Affairs told the panel that Martin's conception of family-friendly programming just isn't selling, saying, quote, "If there were money to be made in the kind of programming you're talking about, I think we would see more of it," end quote. Even Democratic freshman Senator Barack Obama of Illinois is getting in on the act, recently remarking that if broadcasters don't act to limit supposed inappropriate material during programs watched by children, then Congress may have to step in. And yet, for all the political posturing over media content, the number of complaints filed with the FCC over indecency are down this year compared to 2004. There are several reasons attributed to the decline, including broadcasters exercising more care over content and the refocusing of conservative watchdog groups like Parents Television Council on the issue of broadcast violence rather than indecency. Still, indecency complaints are being submitted by the public at a rate of almost 70 per day. And even though the FCC has yet to issue any indecency fines this year, the commission is trying to make it easier for the public to file complaints online. Although, to be fair, these forms are intended to make it easier to file all sorts of complaints about the services and industries the FCC regulates, from telephone and wireless service to indecency. You can find more information about filing complaints with the FCC at the Commission's Enforcement Bureau website, www.fcc.gov/eb. The public interest law firm, the Media Access Project, is taking the television stations of Chicago and Milwaukee to task. Along with Chicago Media Action and the Milwaukee Public Interest Media Coalition, MAP has filed petitions to deny license renewals to every single English-language TV station in the two cities. MAP says that the stations, quote, failed to meet the needs of their community of license, end quote, by failing to adequately cover local and state politics during the fall 2004 election season. MAP says that less than 1% of the station's newscasts were devoted to state or local elections during the four-week period preceding Election Day. As might be expected, these stations' management don't agree. They say that MAP aren't counting non-news programs or special programs like town hall meetings and debates. The challenge to the station's licenses is not likely to be seriously considered by the FCC. Although any person has the right to file a petition to deny a license renewal, the public service standards applied to broadcasters have been so watered down since the Reagan administration as to make the renewal process essentially pro forma. Prior to 1984, the FCC did require all television stations to air news and public service programming, but that standard was eliminated altogether, leaving only the milquetoast requirement that stations have a, quote, basic responsibility to contribute to the overall discussion of issues confronting the community, end quote. The MAP and its coalition partners are calling on the FCC to hold hearings on their petitions to deny the Chicago and Milwaukee license renewals. Because of the FCC's toothless public service requirements, the coalition's more concrete purpose is probably to draw attention to the issue of local news service and its relationship to an informed or ill-informed public. All TV stations in the U.S. are going through the license renewal process between 2004 and 2007. Petitions to challenge a station's license must be submitted 1 month prior to the date a license is set to expire, and expirations are the same for all stations in a given state. States with upcoming license expirations include Iowa and Missouri, where TV licenses expire on February 1, 2006, and Colorado, Minnesota, Montana, South Dakota, and North Dakota, which expire on April 1, 2006. For more information on challenging the license of local TV stations for failure to provide adequate public service, see the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.org. And that's a site you can also turn to see the Media Geek blog. For news and views that don't quite make it onto the program, you can also get archive editions of this radio program in MP3 in the open source Ogg Vorbis format. You can also subscribe to the podcast so you can get the program downloaded automatically to your computer or your MP3 player. And of course, if you have any comments about the program, anything you'd like to hear me cover, or you'd like to see me change, send them along to me, paul@mediageek.org. Radio Algiers is an unlicensed micropower community radio station that had been providing much-needed information to the people of New Orleans still living in or returning to that city. Recently, the station was visited by the FCC. V-Man from Free Radio Santa Cruz recently spoke to a volunteer from Radio Algiers about the station's efforts and the visit from the FCC.
Thanks for being with us today, Susan. You're a volunteer with Radio Algiers. We've given our listeners a little bit of the background of the situation in New Orleans, Louisiana, where you're operating. Tell us a little bit about the radio station itself. What types of broadcasts are you making? How are you able to serve the community there?
Well, we've been broadcasting as part of a relief center based at Common Ground, which is a relief organization that that started up as a grassroots effort ad hoc after the hurricane in New Orleans to provide food for people, to provide medical aid. We have a clinic. We have a distribution center. We have volunteers who are tarping roofs. We cleaned out all of the storm drains, basically doing things that the government should have been doing but wasn't and still isn't in the city of New Orleans. And what the radio was doing and will be doing again shortly as soon as we get back on the air was providing emergency information for folks, telling people where they can get medical aid, where they can get supplies, how to clean their home safely, what kind of precautions they should take in certain areas of the city, as far as masks that people should be wearing and safety equipment that they should have. We also provided a forum for people to be able to air their grievances on various issues. Many people came and told their stories about surviving the post-hurricane flooding of New Orleans, which was a separate event from the hurricane and needs to be kept separate because it was a human-made flood that actually caused so much devastation for the people of New Orleans. So people were able to speak freely about that and to speak about a number of other issues. Most recently, the eviction issue has been a big one, where people have come and told about their issues and the problem of eviction that's going on citywide, where thousands of people are receiving eviction notices in New Orleans area, despite the fact that many people are not here to begin with to receive the notices and don't have transportation back here from where they are, even if they want to come, which many do, and secondarily, people are receiving eviction notices that are not legitimate, notices that say they haven't paid their rent when they have, notices that say their homes are not livable when they are. And the like, because property values, as you may know, are going up in New Orleans right now, and in fact they are skyrocketing, while developers are having a heyday in taking over many of these properties in order to put in high-priced condos, casinos, and similar things. The people who are moderate or low income are being pushed out. So we were able to provide a forum for many of those people, and also to then provide them with the information through our public service announcements of legal aid that was available, and the newly formed New Orleans Legal Action Workers and the New Orleans Housing Emergency Action Team, No Law and No Heat, to help people with their legal issues and to tell them about when the free legal clinic was taking place and the free legal aid lawyers would be available to them. So both on an informational level and on a level of having a forum for people to talk and to share their stories, it was providing a pretty valuable resource for this community because none of the other stations were providing that. In fact, and I want to point this out because I think it's going to be a model in future emergency situations. What happened soon after the hurricane and then the flood in New Orleans, there was a group formed called Radio United, which was headed by Clear Channel, that basically took over the entire FM band. And there were, I think, about 8 different stations that gave over their frequency to this corporate conglomerate.
Sort of a collaboration, right?
And combination of corporations that were able to then broadcast the same thing on many of these stations. And it was, for the most part, not very helpful information. It was a lot of praising of FEMA and the work that FEMA was doing, a lot of apology or apologistic kind of a talk that, well, FEMA is doing the best that they can, Red Cross is doing the best that they can. The only value of those of the broadcast that I could see was call-ins. People would call in extremely angry and upset and you know, would speak for a few minutes before getting cut off. But the call-ins were great. Other than that, it was a pretty straightforward commercial broadcast, and that was what was made available to the people of New Orleans, not just on one station, but I need to reiterate this, that it was taking over of the FM band, that virtually every station that you could hear on the FM band during that time of emergency was this Clear Channel conglomerate and their allies.
And how how has Radio Algiers basically been different from that corporate conglomerate?
Well, you know, as I have just described our content, it's completely different. It's in fact the opposite of what the Clear Channel Radio United was attempting to do. Instead of apologizing for FEMA or trying to justify their lack of readiness and their absence in New Orleans, the radio was providing a forum for people who were able to tell it like it really was and is that these were stories that that the mainstream media would prefer to be silenced. But we're allowing a forum for the unheard voices to be heard.
So you're operating at 88.7 FM. How big is the transmitter? What's your range? How many listeners potentially do you have?
Well, when we first began, we had a 100-watt transmitter, and we're able to reach the whole city of New Orleans, which lasted a couple of weeks until a power surge blew out the transmitter. Always have your uninterruptible power supply on, folks. So the power surge blew out that transmitter, so we were broadcasting at a with a 40-watt after that. The 40-watt was able to get us across the French Quarter, the 9th Ward, the 8th Ward, and 7th Ward, as well as all of Algiers and some of Gretna. So we did get a good chunk of the city with that.
Was this on 24/7? And you know, was it primarily produced by people who have come to New Orleans to help in the relief effort, or was it actually people from the community that were returning? Were those people, are those people actually involved in the operation?
Well, the operation was run out of the relief center that is Common Ground, which is a relief center run out of the home of Malik Rahim, who is a Black Panther and a local activist who has been an integral part of the building of this, and also is himself a Katrina survivor, along with a number of people that he worked with previously. Have been a part of this. Other than that, a lot of volunteers coming in from all over the country have been extremely helpful in getting interviews, producing content, making the equipment work, and all of that. For the future, we are going to be working with the Tulane University radio station and broadcasting a lot of the same content, but with the college radio station that is now going back online. Their studio was damaged by the flood, but now they are able to go back on the air and are going to be working with us.
My name is V-Man, sitting here with DJ Bradley, and we are speaking with Susan, a volunteer journalist and programmer from Radio Algiers, operating at 88.7 FM on the West Bank of the Mississippi in New Orleans, Louisiana. They were visited on November 2nd by the Federal Communications Commission, and Susan, I wanted you to describe what that situation was like.
Well, it was the New Orleans Police Department accompanied by a technician and an engineer and someone from the enforcement division of the Federal Communications Division, Federal Communications Commission, the local chapter. They were extremely belligerent, saying that they were going to come in and seize everything that we had. Of course, remember, this is a relief center, and so it's extremely frightening to people who having had the experiences that they did with the local police after the hurricane, who are coming here to get supplies to see officers coming in that way. They did threaten to seize equipment, but they did not have any orders or any search warrant to do so. they were asked to leave.
Tell me more about the radio station now that there's been a visit, so you're not on the air currently. Is that right?
Oh, right. We're not on the air currently, but we should be working with Tulane University and back up on the air in conjunction with them within a few days.
Now, I understand there are federal laws that state that it's basically in a state of martial law and in a state of emergency, you don't need a license to broadcast if you're providing emergency life-saving information such as you are with Radio Algiers. Can you comment on that? Do you have any idea?
Well, that is what we were doing. We actually did speak to the FCC about it and asked them about the possibility of getting a temporary license. Which was done in Houston by a group of people who are trying to broadcast into the Astrodome the needed information for the people there. So we were told that that we would not be able to get an emergency license like that for New Orleans because what the people are facing in New Orleans is not an emergency, and that's what we were told. So, so we weren't able to get any license like that. I do know of that provision, and I suppose that it could be a lawsuit were we to try to pursue it.
Given that,
because we are still under a state of emergency.
Indeed, given that there's been a visit now, and there's been a threat to possibly have further, you know, possibly seizure action or some sort of shutdown of the radio station. Do you have plans to return to the airwaves? Given the dire situation that people are facing, it seems really an urgent task, in other words, to get news and information out to people. I'm wondering if this will be able to be re-sparked, if there will be another attempt to broadcast, maybe from a different location, or I don't want you to get too specific in terms of your tactics, but I'm just curious if you have plans to return.
Our plan is to work with Tulane University and broadcast in conjunction with them and providing the same information and the same community content, and hopefully that will start within within just a few days, and it's 91.5 FM, and that their transmitter is a pretty strong transmitter that people have said they can hear all the way to Mississippi. So we will be working with them and creating community based content out of this college. Radio station WTUL.
What do you see as the advantages of that? Other than, I mean, my question really is, why can't the two projects happen simultaneously?
Well, first of all, there aren't enough people to staff two stations. There are barely enough for one, and because of that, we are going to try and work together. To put the content out and hopefully really turn WTUL into a community radio station, which they have there have been attempts to do that before the hurricane, but again, as a college station, it kind of ebbs and flows with the flow of students. The students are not in town. Tulane University is temporarily having classes in Houston, so they are not in town, and will be back. They will be back in town in January, and hopefully at that point, many of the students who are involved will be able to work in conjunction with us and see the advantages of having a community radio station, and you know, see all of the advantages that that provides for the community. Is something that New Orleans has been lacking.
Indeed.
Even prior to the hurricane.
To what degree, besides media making, are you involved with the relief efforts? And you were talking a bit about some of the racial dynamics with the displacement of mainly poor black folks throughout New Orleans, and you know, this whole basically gentrification program that seems to be taking shape there. Maybe talk a little more about how, you know, grassroots relief can provide people with hope, you know, to rebuild their community to some degree to what it was before.
One of the things that we've done is to help fight evictions. And we have had two victories, and we're two for two in the housing complexes that we've taken on. Both of them have been housing complexes where the management has tried to evict everyone with a wholesale eviction. And by fighting them with a media campaign, having press conferences, having protests and rallies, in one case a takeover by residents of the management office, and various other techniques, those two housing complexes have been won. The tenants are not being evicted, and so we're moving to fight for other housing complexes as well throughout the city. And so that's just one of many things. You asked, you know, as far as the relief effort, we just opened in the Ninth Ward a supply center, a distribution center for cleaning supplies, food, water, tools to be lent, a clinic, and a legal aid clinic that's happening once a week, so people are able to get the help that they need to help rebuild their homes and to support whatever claims they have legally, whether it's insurance issues, bankruptcy issues, unemployment issues, or eviction issues. All of those are things that lawyers, the volunteer lawyers that are working with us, are taking on.
We've been speaking with Susan. She's a volunteer with Radio Algiers, also working with Common Ground. The website commongroundrelief.org is the way to get more information about that. I appreciate your time today, Susan.
All right. No problem.
Thanks for joining us.
That was V-Man from Free Radio Santa Cruz interviewing a volunteer with the unlicensed community radio station Radio Algiers, which had been serving the people of New Orleans. Thanks to V-Man and Bradley for allowing us to rebroadcast that interview. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in 1 week with more news of our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at www.mediageek.org. There you'll find the Media Geek blog, with frequently updated news and views on independent media. You'll also find archive editions of the program in MP3 and the open source Ogg Vorbis format. You can also subscribe to the podcast to have the program automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Luo. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Portions of the program are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. Media Geek is also aired on community radio stations KQRP in Salida, California, KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, and WTND in Macomb, Illinois. And Media Geek is free to air on your local, non-commercial, or community radio station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.org. You can use that email address to send comments too. I'm always interested to know what you think of the show. Again, that's Paul at MediaGeek.org. Thanks for tuning in.